The cold silence that we don't dare speak. There's a wall between us and a river so deep. We keep pretending that there's nothing wrong. There's a cold of silence and it can't go on.
Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt and this is Cutting Through the Matrix on the 28th of March 2008. The newcomers, look into the website cuttingthroughthematrix.com and try and piece as much as you can of this wonderful New World Order together. It's very, very old, in fact, at least the plans have been laid long, long ago. We're just living through the culmination of this final phase of this part of it. And look into alanwattsentinel.eu for transcripts which you can download and print up in the various languages of Europe. I should also mention off the bat that you keep me going because you buy the books and the DVDs, CDs I have for sale. That's the only income that comes from this. I don't get paid. I don't ask for pay from the shows I'm on, TV or radio, because the word has to get out. However, I do have to live. And for those who want to donate as well, you'll find that you can donate by PayPal directly to me. Be careful of other sites out there using my name, because this is the only authorized site, is cuttingthroughthematrix.com. And you can make sure that any money you send actually goes to me, because things have really slacked off, and thousands and thousands and thousands of people across the planet listen to me every week. I know that because of the bandwidth draw on all the sites I have up. So therefore, it'd be very helpful if you keep me going, or we'll go the same way as Sweet Liberty went when I was on there, when everyone else thought everyone else was going to send money, and the result was no one did. And once the show went off the air suddenly, then comes the howls and squeals, like, what happened? And the obvious answer was, well, you left it to others to pay. And that's why you go off. This is a light switch going off. It's here one day, gone the next. And then all you're left with are those who've been geared and groomed for the positions in what's called the Patriot Network. And you'll be led in circles for as long as this phase lasts. Last show I did, I was talking about particular experiments that they used on volunteers in universities, not just in the United States, although the U.S. usually led them. They did these experiments all over the world to create a form of apathy, because they knew that after the Cold War, under a world system, they'd have a lot of people on their hands, a world society going through massive transition as the UN would amalgamate different countries together and bureaucrats would be rushing back and forth doing all their deals, bringing all this world system together. And they'd have a population in the West who'd been trained, and I mean trained, to be good producers and consumers. That's the definition of a good citizen under the United Nations. But they also knew that they wouldn't have to keep us happy for so long. We'd end up not having the money to purchase all the stuff, all the little carrots to give us. So here was their plan. I'll get back with more after these messages. Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt, and we're back cutting through the matrix, talking about the world and how to control the world as they envisaged it during the Cold War. They knew it wouldn't last forever. They knew as far back as the early 70s how long it would take before the Soviet Union came down and it merged the two systems together. This was known that they would eventually be merged together because we have the Rees Commission and the Dodge report on it, where he was sent off, Senator Dodge was sent off, and he talked to the top institutes in the United States, these big multi-billion dollar foundations, and he was told, and he published his findings too, that the purpose of these big foundations, you know, the Rockefeller, Carnegie, Ford, and so on, all the big ones, ones you think are philanthropic in nature, their purpose was to merge the Soviet system seamlessly with that of the West. And it's completely integrated. It's also called the Third Way. And we're going through it now. It's now retrain the public of the whole world from all systems into the Third Way, which has to be run on a scientific type of system, the type that Aldous Huxley talked about, scientific dictatorship, where the world will be run by the experts. And we've been trained our whole lives, especially since the 50s onwards, to always listen to experts. Don't think for yourself. You don't know anything, and you're too stupid to think for yourself. Leave it to the experts. And we get experts on every television show you can imagine, even during the weather shows, and come special experts to tell you how to dress and so on. So that's to stop you thinking for yourself. And then the build-up of fear, they said, would be necessary. Fear works wonders with people, because the great hero of the Soviet system was Pavlov. And Pavlov did incredible experiments with dogs. The man's an utter sadistic, evil psychopath. And but his experiments were experimented with and repeated all over the world. Now, those who are squeamish, even though this isn't in very great detail, don't listen to the next little part, because it's about Martin E.P. Siegelman in the United States, who was doing experiments in the United States in the 60s. And you'll find some of this from the University of Pennsylvania. The great universities, the lights, they call themselves, since they're all high Masonic, the lights are the ones who are supposed to guide us all along this path, the luminaries. This is about learned helplessness, and it's to be used on the whole population. So believe me, when you're experimenting with dogs or animals or chimpanzees, they have you in mind. In early 1965, Martin E.P. Seligman and his colleagues, while studying the relationship between fear and learning, accidentally discovered an unexpected phenomenon while doing experiments on dogs using Pavlovian classical conditioning. And that's used in many areas, also school, classical conditioning. As you may observe in yourselves or a dog, when you are presented with food, you have a tendency to salivate. Pavlov discovered that if a ringing bell or tone is repeatedly paired with this presentation of food, dog salivates. Later, all you have to do is ring the bell and the dog salivates. However, in Seligman's experiment, instead of pairing the tone with the food, he paired it with a harmless shock. He's talking about electrical shocks here. Restraining the dog in a hammock during the learning phase. So the dog was to be taught through getting shocked when it had its natural responses, and had it in a sort of strung-up hammock. The idea then was that after the dog learned this, the dog would feel fear on the presentation of a tone and would then run away or do some other behavior. This is all in taxpayers' money, to remember, and foundation funding, because you find Pentagon and big players are involved in the findings of this, are tremendously interested. Next, they put the conditioned dog in a shuttle box, which consists of a low fence dividing the box into two compartments. The dog can easily see over the fence and jump over if it wishes. So they rang the bell. Surprisingly, nothing happened. They were expecting the dog to jump over the fence. Then they decided to shock the conditioned dog, and again, nothing happened. Now, can you imagine these guys who could live next door to you with families, gone off to work, and here they are electrocuting an animal, and all the only emotion they have is excitement at the findings. Just like Aldous Huxley, he was the same. The dog just pathetically laid there. Hey, what's going on? When they put a normal dog into the shuttle box who never experienced inescapable shock, that means no matter where you moved, what you did, you'd still get shocked. The dog, as expected, immediately jumped over the fence to the other side. Apparently, what the conditioned dog learned in the hammock was that trying to escape from shocks is futile. Do you hear that? Trying to escape from the shocks is futile. The dog has been trained that no matter what it did, where it jumped to, it would simply lie there and quiver in apathy. And that's the point of it. It's a teaching and a learning of apathy. This dog learned to be helpless. This result was opposite to that predicted by B.F. Skinner's behaviorism, which argued that the dog must have been given a positive reward, like a yummy dog biscuit. It just lied there. In order to salvage their position, they even went so far as to suggest that the cessation of pain acted as the reward for the dog to sit. But this was not a very good argument. One could alternately argue that when the shock went on while the dog was sitting, it was being punished for sitting. Reminds me of that old joke, Hugh, why did the man pound his thumb with a hammer? A, because it felt good to stop. They love how the little jokes they can put in at all this cruelty. These observations started a scientific revolution, resulting in the displacement of behaviorism by cognitive psychology. What you are thinking determines your behavior, not only the visible rewards or punishments. The theory of learned helplessness. Tremendously important as to what's happening today, and it'll get worse too as they bring up the expenses of everything that's transported, that's everything you buy, and horrify you with the coming terror that's supposedly everywhere, and the plagues and all the rest of it. It's all to create a state of learned helplessness. Then you look to the big brothers, the big ones, the experts for advice, and they'll tell you exactly what to do, where to go. So it provides for a model for explaining depression, a state characterized by lack of affect, that's normal emotions and responses, and feeling. Depressed people become that way because they learn to be helpless. Depressed people learn that whatever they did is futile. During the course of their lives, depressed people apparently learned that they have no control. Learned helplessness explained a lot of things, but then researchers began to find exceptions of people who did not get depressed, even after many bad life experiences. Seligman discovered that a depressed person thought about the bad event in more pessimistic ways than a non-depressed person. He called this thinking explanatory style borrowing ideas from arbitration theory. Attribution theory, actually, it's called. For example, let's say you fail a math exam. How do you explain away or why? You could think, I am stupid. You think, number two, I'm not good in math, or three, I was unlucky, it was Friday the 13th, that's a Masonic joke. The math teacher is prejudiced, five. The math teacher grades are hard, six, I was feeling ill that day. The math teacher gave especially hard tests this time, etc., etc. Seligman found that these explanations could be rated among three dimensions, personalization, internal versus external, pervasiveness, specific versus universal, and permanence, temporary versus permanent. He found that the most pessimistic explanatory style is correlated with the most depression. The statement, I am stupid, is classified as internal use of I, universal and permanent. This response conveys a sense of discouragement, hopelessness, and despair. They understand this is really for warfare purposes, although they'll always say it's for mental health or whatever the excuse they use. On the other hand, a more optimistic person would blame someone or something else, such as the math teacher gave an especially hard test this time. The most optimistic explanatory style is external, specific, and temporary. Conversely, for a good event, the explanatory style reverses. For example, for a perfect score in the math exam, the depressive would say, I was lucky that day, discounting his intelligence. The optimist would say something much more encouraging, such as, I am smart. We often learn explanatory styles from our parents. Well, that's been broken too. which must mean there's more pathetic and apathy-type people out there today. There are advantages to both optimistic and pessimistic explanatory styles. Certain jobs call for an optimistic outlook, such as inventing or sales. Other jobs, such as accounting or quality control, call for a more pessimistic outlook. So, Seligman wrote a book called Learned Optimism. And that's one of the external things that they do. They'll often do these big, tremendous, many years, in fact, of investigations and experimentations. And they put a book out to the public, and you think that's what they're really all about. But, of course, there's a whole series or many volumes of books gone to the big boys, the controllers, to the Pentagon, or to the PSYOPs warfare departments, because that's where the real data goes. It's all about controlling the public through the creation of apathy. Now, remember, Lord Bertrand Russell also talked about creating apathy amongst the public in order to control them all but much better. Very, very important in psychological warfare. And they've used both methods up until recently, the optimistic one and the depressive one. The depression one is now setting in. And I'll explain these after the following break. I'm Alan Watt, and we're cutting through the matrix. I was explaining how they create different types of moods in society according to the time period that's been planned and we're working through. During the 70s and 80s and starting off early in the 60s, we saw this explosion in the West of supposed freedom and do your own thing that came from the top down, not from the bottom up. And we know that the CIA and MI6 were in the culture creation business. We're told to be happy, 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 and have a lot of fun, and act like bunnies at Easter, which wasn't hard to encourage, especially when the pill came along. And who was to think about it at the time that the whole idea was to destroy the old system and relationships and marriage for the coming system? It was already planned to occur after the Cold War was over and the world all became as one. And then, of course, they would have subcategories of genders until any idea of what once was normal would be eradicated, even the memory of it. And that was very, very important to them, not because they like all kinds of people or those in between, but because that they eradicate, just to say, the memory of any sort of normality whatsoever, because they had planned to go through into a new world order with new types of creatures that would be grown specifically for their tasks, right out of Brave New World. And that is on the cards, and it's coming down. But during the time period, as I say, when we're told to have fun, out came credit cards for the first time, a bit cheap, easy credit for everyone. Whereas before that, you couldn't get a credit card, you couldn't even get a loan unless you had something to back it up with, the house or something of value. And here they are throwing them at you because they wanted to create a feeling of optimism and consumerism. Just buy, buy, buy. And when you're all buying and happy and content with all this glut of stuff, then you're not really watching or thinking too much for yourself. And we never, ever had so much entertainment churned out. I can remember in the late 70s, they said that one of the biggest exports of the United States, I think it was the second largest outside of missiles and weaponry, was movies from Hollywood, churning them out, and people just ate them up. Very important part to go through. But now is the time, now that everything's over, the fake East-West scenario is done. They're bringing the new scientific era into view. The New World Order, the one that Bush Sr. talked about on September the 11th, 1990, and he also repeated it on September the 11th, 1991. They love that date. very important because that's when you see a goddess was born out of the head of Zeus, a new type of goddess, kind of male-female warrior type clad in armor, born by her or its own free will. It made itself be, came into B-I-B, as we say. So we're going along this path, and now they're taking away the credit cards. We saw that happen when they started to come after people who couldn't pay and confiscate all their goods and make them pay regardless by law. Because before they could just declare bankruptcy. And we see that everything going up through the roof, the cost of living, because now is a time to induce the sense of apathy and fear. As people happen to notice many years later, mind you, but now they're noticing we have no factories left. They were too busy enjoying all this stuff with their credit cards when the factories were getting put abroad into China by their own governments and by their own tax money funding it, by the way. We paid for the uprooting of the factories, the setting up of the factories in China, and we're paying for the losses incurred up to 10 years if the companies so declare. All done through the GATT Treaty. Another thing that most folk were oblivious of because we're too busy having fun. And the GATT Treaty was a general agreement on trade and tariffs. It was a whole new world system. As I say, now the time for bringing in apathy comes, apathy. And it's coming in all around us. People are going into psychiatrists like never before and therapists and all kinds of new age therapists too. Because they're so unhappy, they can't explain why. They just know that things are kind of wrong. And apathy eventually gives you this learned helplessness. There's nothing you can do about it. And that's reinforced by all the myriads of governmental agencies now in operation, telling us all what to do, training us for another part of the scenario, which is eventual depopulation of society in a fairly rapid scale if they get their way. It's also part of the agenda to move whole peoples from one area of a country to another area of the country under the guise of either terrorist attack or plague. They want a full-scale scenario of refugees, like a real war. This is a war, remember. They don't use this word lightly, a war on terror, even though it's all hypothetical to the average person. It's all rather vague and abstract. They're using these terms deliberately because it's a war to the public, but there's another meaning to the war for those in the know. They have their war rooms, for instance, at Yale, at the Skull and Bones, and all high major Masonic institutions. I'll explain what I'm talking about after these messages.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Hi, folks. I'm Alan Watt, cutting through the matrix. And I'm going to take a call because we've got Alan from the UK calling from our phone box, I believe.
He just dropped off, Alan.
I just dropped off. It's a pity. He might call back. If he does, I'll try and grab him quick. But talking about the apathy and so on that's been created today. Now they're taking all the goodies away and manipulating the oil prices, gasoline, diesel, and all the rest of it, which means everything transported to the stores, everything you need, is shooting up in price. But they also want a full-scale war scenario on the go, a constant war. Remember what Rumsfeld said, this could be a 100 years war. Look into your history books and look into all the knights and all the wars that they created down through the centuries. Look into the 100 years war and the 30 years war and all these numbers they put on their particular wars, because each war was designed to bring a different society out at the other end of it. Remember what Professor Carl Quigley said. Professor Carl Quigley said that you can get more done in 5 years of war on a social level, meaning social change, cultural change, than 50 years of peace and propaganda. So war has a different function than the general public understand or comprehend it. And war, too, has always been to loot countries. It hasn't changed, never will change as long as they have wars. They loot because there are masters in this world who believe it's their right to loot, as long as they do it cunningly and craftily. That's how it's done. They make it legal to do so, you see. What is legality? It just means that those in power have written a law to allow themselves to do as they wish. Just like the whole anti-terrorism bill and the Patriot Act and all the rest of it, that means you're stripped of all your rights. In fact, you have no rights. You can be lifted, imprisoned, without charge, and held indefinitely, and no relative needs to even be informed that you've been taken or what's happened to you. And this is in the 21st century. It's quite amazing, really, because in the United States, that was one of the beefs they had about the British and Hessian troops who came in, mainly Hessian troops stationed on American soil after they'd finished off the French and grabbed it for jolly old England. And then before the Civil War started, the American Independence War started, one of their beefs was the fact that they could grab anybody and hold them indefinitely without charge. And here you have it, as happened here on a whole continent without a whimper from the general public who live in television land. We live in the conditioned fantasy land that's been promoted, indoctrinated into them, and they have no ability to perceive things for themselves, mainly because they have no true identity of themselves as individuals. They are composites of their indoctrination. That's why they can't stand back and perceive and look and come to judgments for themselves. You don't need the media to come to a conclusion for you. Remember, that's what Zbigniew Brzezinski talked about. Others talked about it. Many others and published it in their own books. These are big players in warfare departments and psyops warfare schemes, because rule is always by deception. Always by deception. And the whole idea is to alter your perceptions at the bottom level so you think nothing is going wrong, even though the evidence is all around you that it is going wrong. We're already in a scientific dictatorship. And Brzezinski said shortly the public will be unable to reason for themselves. And how we judge our sanity as individuals is to bounce ideas off others in conversation. We don't realize we're having politically correct conversation all the time, because what comes out of the mouth of the other person will be the latest indoctrination from television or a show they've watched, or even the topic itself. You see, it's all politically correct. As long as you part the same stuff back, then you must be all right. So we're all sane together. We're all talking about the same things. We all understand the same shows that we watch. That's how they come to the conclusion. We're all sane. And here's someone coming along and saying, do you know what's really happening? And you start filling them in with the data. Well, you're from a different planet. That's not in their indoctrination. It does not compute. So they'll think that you're the crazy one. And they'll think they're doing the world a favor by having you locked up or put away. That's what's really happening. We're living in a scientific dictatorship of which the public knows almost nothing. Even those who think they're waking up inside a patriot movement are going round in circles in 100,000 directions and blaming one little group or another little group without getting the big, big picture of how it's much bigger than all of that. Much bigger than all of that. And there certainly are powers, above even the groups that you might hate specifically, thinking they're the ones who are doing it. It's much, much bigger than that and much more clever. Now I've got Nadira from Toronto here. Are you there, Nadira?
Hi, Alan. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, hi, Alan. I just want to let you know I've been listening to some of the callers and whatnot, And I just want to let you know that the book you wrote, I read it. And for anyone questioning whether or not, you know, to get it, they have to get this book because it explains so much. Thank you so very much. A great book, and they should get it. Another thing is I don't want to hear you having to tell people about supporting you. Everyone who's listening tomorrow can surely afford a $10 or $20 money order. So they're all going to go out tomorrow and send that out to you. And while we're talking, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. You talk about how this, you say anger and how, you know, the powers that be want to keep us subdued. And then you, on the other hand, say anger is not too good a thing. But don't we need to get a little enraged here, a little, you know,
passionate about... Yeah, what I do is I call it righteous indignation.
Right, right.
And you see, once we're angry, it's like judo or karate. If you lose your temper, you lose the sight of what's happening immediately, and you're beaten.
Mm-hmm.
And so you must... get righteous indignation, which is like a little bit irked without losing your cool.
Of course.
So your intellect must always work cool blast all the time.
Right.
But you don't get to the angry phase until you end up just shouting at cops. That's going to do no good at all. You've got to... It's the same thing with the riots in the streets, which will come. They know it's going to come, and they will agitate them into being, in fact. There's no point bashing the guys in the ninja suits there with the shields, because they're just low-level minions, just like the faceless ones in the Star Wars series. They're just low-level employees. And the big boys, as always, sit above at any war, smoking their cigars and drinking their brandy and laughing at it all. We have to go much higher than that. And, you know, it would take an awful lot of people at the right places to simply tell the big boys, and I mean every parliament building in the planet, that we know what's going on. We know, and we're having no more of it. Because if we don't do it shortly, you know, we won't have a chance to do it at all. The big boys have this planned. They've planned a totalitarian system, which is truly coming into view. I've lost count of the laws that have been passed every day. I do get a lot of stuff sent to me I never mention on the air. Some of it's too scary.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to petrify the public into inactivity. But yet we're going into a big scenario in the near future. And people are going to be horrified. A real war situation when they will forcibly move perhaps even cities out to other cities and that kind of thing. Real refugee stuff. Full-scale war scenario that's coming.
Right. I know. Wow. You know, keep talking. I mean, this is the only place where, you know, after a while in society, because everything is so numb, your brain gets kind of numbed out too. So
yes.
Keep talking. You've explained so much about words. And I really like that March 6th talk. It was beautiful. Keep talking. Thank you so, so very much. And people, come on. I need to hear this guy every week. So let's do our part. Have a good night, Alan. Thank you.
And thanks for calling,
okay.
Nadir.
Ciao.
Yeah, we're living, as I say, in tough times. And I mean, I've watched this for many years. I've grown up knowing what was happening. My parents didn't even know. I didn't know. I couldn't even get through to them. Because I went into books very early, adult books. I read all the Russell books and the Wellesley's books and the Huxley book. All the Huxley members of the families wrote books, and I read them all. And as far as back as Sir Thomas Huxley, The Power of Darwin, and I went to Darwin and his friends too. These characters are much more than the professions they were given or the titles that they were given. They were much, much more. Look at the contacts who came to see the very young Charles Darwin. Tells you all you need to know about the world revolutionary system. It's all interconnected, and it was all basically given royal blessing from the top. All culture members, Plato said, comes from the top and is promoted downwards. They don't allow grassroots culture. They certainly don't support it financially. They would rather wither away, because anything from the people could have unforeseen consequences with rippling effects and knock their whole agenda off kilter. Now, we've got Will from Pennsylvania there.
How you doing, Alan?
Yes, is that Will?
I wasn't expecting you so quick.
Okay.
I can look at a police state, the impending police state, lately, and it's really kind of disturbing. I think we have more of the people, even if it does scare them. Question that's been lingering is what, when you look into the documents and you see that they're preparing for riots, the lingering question on everybody's list is what are they planning to do to us? That they're expecting the people to riot, and it's not, from what I learned, I mean, as you said, we're going to be walking antennas.
Yeah.
Brinsky's talking about frying people's brains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, we already are walking antennas because we've been breathing in metallic particles for the last 10
yeah, the
years.
The barium and the heavy metals, right?
That's right. And so we already have these doses in our systems. We're breathing it in. We swallow it. It's on the food. It's in the vegetables. It's in some people's drinking water, especially those in the cities where they take the water right from reservoirs. That stuff's getting sprayed over every day. And so we're already walking antennas. And we do know from the declassified documentation on HARP type technology, the ELF technology and the microwave technology, that it makes it much more easy to target individuals or whole societies because you are basically a walking antenna.
And people don't understand, Alan. I talk to some of these people. They think they say, why are they still living here if they're polluting the air? There's a polymer fiber in their chemtrails that they can pretty much, direct to an area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know.
I came across the guy Michael Aquino, NSA general.
Yeah.
This guy is scary. He looks like a grown-up Eddie Munster. His wife's name is Lilith, and she looks like Lillian Munster.
Yeah.
I never heard you touch on this guy. I just came across him. It freaked me out. Do you know any?
No, it's just another front man. They put these characters out there to entice young people into. I think he was part of the Church of Satan. And Aquino, of course.
Yeah, he founded his own temple, Temple of Set.
Yes, but remember where he worked for. He worked for the American military in the PSYOPs department. That's your first clue. And so he was he's a Pentagon man starting one of these decks off. See, they made it all exciting for the youngsters during the heavy rock, heavy metal era. To go into what they call Satanism and to experiment with drugs and all the rest of it. They had to get people experimenting with drugs. It knocks them out of action and makes them very placid for the rest of their lives, too. They become easy to control, more easily manipulated.
Which dovetails with the culture creations
techniques
you talk about.
Yeah. And the same with Anton LaVey. They're all connected. And Anton LaVey, I think his real name was,
Your site is a wealth, a treasure trove. I love it. Do you have anything up there about the MK Ultra program?
I've talked some on it. With the MK Ultra, I should say that the CBC television series was done on it. It was called, I think, the Sleep Room, Sleep Room. You'll find that in cbcarchives.org, and you can download that. I think it's free. But it's also a whitewash. Remember, whatever they expose to the public is a whitewash for the higher stuff they were doing.
Yes.
They weren't just using rock music or repetition while they strapped a motorcycle helmet onto you and using LSD. They were also doing more remote type, electronic warfare techniques on them as well. And they also had a lot of young children there they didn't mention in the movie.
Okay, I'm going to check that out. And they also have, like, in the media, they'll have buffers to where, like Paul Harvey, Beyond the Headlines, which is another whitewash.
Yeah.
Even the people that are giving you the inside scoop are whitewashing it. And they pretty much infiltrated us.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, there's a book called it's 2,000 Famous Freemasons. I think everybody you've ever had in politics in every country has one. It's all there.
Well, you keep up the great work, sir. I love your show, man.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Bye now. And we've got Jake from Texas. Are you there, Jake?
Yes. I won't tell you to keep up the great work because I know what that means.
What it means, I know. Yeah.
Okay. The thing I would like to talk to tonight is the Special Weapons Progress Reports. Have you ever gone into those? I know Boyd Graves has done some work on those, mm-hmm. Talking about the development of AIDS as a weapon.
Mm-hmm. Well, it first came out, the money was allocated to find something that would destroy the immune system completely. After Kissinger came out with that particular bill, when he declared that overpopulation was the number one enemy of the state, that's when money was funded.
I would also like to point out that, okay, I hear the music coming up, and
yeah,
I'll wait.
Hold on, and we'll discuss it after the break.
Okay.
I'm Alan Watt, cutting through the matrix. And we've got Jake from Texas still on the line. Are you there, Jake?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes.
Well, the thing I wanted to get across is that this sort of thing has been going on since,
for an awful long time.
Yeah, since, like, the 1840s.
I know.
And most people don't even know that. From what I haven't read all of these reports, and I haven't read every little page because there's thousands of pages in this.
Yeah.
But I would like the listeners to know that they are out there. They are in, like, university libraries and things like that. The reports that they want are the Special Weapons Progress Reports number 8, 9, 12, 13, 14, and 15.
And also the laws that the U.S. passed only about 4 years ago allowing them to test anything on the American public.
Yes, that would probably be a good place to go to.
Yep.
But if you get into these, you realize that they've been doing this since the 1840s.
Yeah, and especially since
they
really wrapped it up.
New.
Yeah, they really started it heavily in World War One with all the troops when they could inject them. In fact, that's when the Spanish flu broke out. The troops brought them all back from Europe and spread that Spanish flu all over the place.
Well, the flu virus was created from what I can deduce from what I have read is that all viruses have been created in a laboratory by people.
And I wouldn't object to that because I tell you, I've studied them, and the people don't know all the qualifications I've got, but I've studied them all right, and they look like tiny robots. They don't look like anything from life or from nature, and they act like little robots. They even have legs that will detract and retract. And they'll detract and come down and land on a cell. They have a little proboscis that comes out like a drill. It'll drill right through the membrane and then it empties its contents into the cell inside. It truly does look like a robot. But I've done a talk once on the Soviet system. They used viruses instead of antibiotics from 1917. There was a Canadian doctor went over there, and it's called phagocytes. Try and look up the program on the cbcarchives.org. It's called phagocytes.
Phagocytes, okay.
Incredible. It tells you that they had these things bred, and they had viruses that could go after any other virus or bacterium. They still have it today. The rights were bought up by a company in New York, and it's been suppressed in the States, although I believe a little place over in Europe has opened up and allowed it to be. It will cure any known disease. I'm talking about infectious disease.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to make your listeners aware of this sort of stuff and where the references are.
Yes.
Thank you very much for your work.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Bye.
Yeah, so we're kept in the dark like mushrooms, and were fed pablum and trivia. Pablum and absolute trivia. It's quite amazing, you know, when you look at the whole communist agenda, because they did publish the Communist International's meetings every year, and you'll find compendiums of them in books that nobody bothers reading, and it gives you the whole agenda for the world. And yet here's the Western countries that supposedly won the Cold War championing all of these parts of the same agenda. But why is that? Well, it's because the Cold War was necessary, set up as an evil empire that they could both be taxed to create tremendous weaponry, and all the weaponry would eventually be used on us. Now, I think the music's kicking in for the end of the show, and I'll be back next week with more. So from Hamish and myself, up in a cold Ontario, Canada, it's minus 17. It's good night to me, your God, or your gods go with you.